Coming today on Negotiate Your Best Life with Rebecca Zung.
Because if you're infatuated with something, it occupies space and time in your mind and runs you. When you resent something, it occupies space and time in your mind and runs you. When you're poised and present, you run you. And that's where you have sort of an enlightenment. You're letting the voice and the vision on the inside be louder than the opinions on the outside, is the secret I mentioned.
So the big questions are these. How can we navigate and negotiate every situation in our lives, in our career, in our businesses, in our relationships, and even with ourselves for our own self-worth? In other words, what if you could win every time and have no losers? Let's face it, we're not negotiating just to buy a car or for a pay raise. We are negotiating for living in every aspect of our lives. How can we do that powerfully, successfully, and victoriously? Those are the questions, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Rebecca Zung, and welcome to the time where you negotiate your best life. To another episode of Negotiate Your Best Life. I am Rebecca Zung, and I am honored and thrilled today to have Dr. John DeMartini here with me today. I had heard of him years and years ago when I watched The Secret the first time and when I had read the book, and I'm so excited to actually get to talk to him here in person and also bring you his amazing brain and content and all of the stuff that he has to offer. He has so much to offer as far as helping people from breakdown to breakthrough and using life's crises to help to unleash your full potential. He has studied over 30,000 books. He's helped people globally. He's world renowned in as a specialist in human behavior. He's a researcher, author, global educator, and really probably doesn't really need that much of an introduction. But I am so thrilled to welcome you, Dr. John DeMartini.
Well, thank you for having me. I was looking forward to it.
Thank you. And so I want to start at the beginning, as I'm really, really fascinated that your childhood was a difficult one. I mean, you had some learning issues, you had some physical issues. By the time you were a teenager, you were living on the streets or something. Take us back to all of that. I think it's really important for people to hear where you came from, because so many people think, I can't get anywhere in life because I have this obstacle or this obstacle. But you had more than your share.
Well, I was born with my arm and leg turned in. And so by the time I was attempting to stand up, that didn't work so well. So I had to start wearing braces on my arm and leg at about a year and a half to age four. So I was kind of like a Forrest Gump kind of guy. I also had to go to a speech pathologist starting at one and a half because I couldn't move my mouth properly. And I used to remember using strings and buttons in my mouth to try to do all these exercises.
Gosh.
Then when I got into elementary school, no matter what had happened, I just couldn't do the reading. And I wrote backwards. I wrote like this because my hand was turned in. And the teacher was sort of an elderly woman that didn't have a lot of resources, apparently, like they would have today. And she first put me in remedial reading, then into the dunce class. So I had to wear a dunce cap, believe
no
it or not.
No way.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't even know that was a real thing.
That was a real thing. And Daryl Dalrymple, who's a... I wish I could find him today. I don't know what's happened to him with his life. But he and I used to have to stare out the window until we decided we were going to learn. And then my teacher told my parents to come to the school, and they sat in front of me, and they said, I'm afraid your son's got learning problems. I don't think he's ever going to be able to read or write properly or be able to communicate effectively or probably amount to anything or go very far in life. But now that he got out of his braces, he likes to run. So I was on the run. I guess I've been on the run all my life.
Yeah.
So I did run, and I got into sports. And the teacher meant well. She said, get him into sports. He might be able to excel there. And I did. I did okay in sports. But baseball, when my parents moved when I was 12 to Richmond, Texas, baseball didn't work out. If you struck somebody out on a pitch, a gang would attack you the next day. It's a real low socioeconomic area with a lot of racial
stuff.
Oh,
my gosh.
So then I left home when I was 13 because I couldn't make it in school. I left home. I was a street kid. I lived in a bowling alley. I lived in a park. I lived in a car. I lived at friends' houses. I was kind of an interesting character.
At 13.
Then at 14, so I hitchhiked out to California and down into Mexico to go surfing. I was a surfer by then. And so I lived in Huntington Beach, California, and up and down the coast, and had a wild trip. Slept behind the Golden Bear nightclub and met Buddy Miles and all these singers, and Ted Nugent, the rock stars.
Yeah.
I had an adventure. It wasn't, so I can't say it's all bad. It was had some adventures, some of the craziest adventures. Then I made it at 15. I went over to Hawaii. I lived under a bridge first, too loud there. I went to a park bench, which is still there, because I went there last year to surf.
Oh, my gosh.
I told my, this is the park bench I used to sleep under.
Oh, my gosh.
I lived in a bathroom, then an abandoned car, and finally in a tent, and a little grass house tent combination. And then I nearly died at 17. I was surfing big waves, and I almost died, and I had strychnine poisoning. And then I ended up in the recovery of that. Luckily, a lady found me in the jungle in the tent and took me to a health food store and tried to get some food in me. And I was leaving the health food store, and it had an announcement of a special speaker. And I never went to a speaker, but there was some sort of little event going on at the recreation hall that I thought, I need to go there. In the process of doing that, I met Paul Bragg. And in 1 hour, this one man with one message absolutely changed my life. He basically said that, you know, that we have a body, we have a mind, and we have a soul. When the body is guided by the mind and the mind is directed by the soul, you are more potentialed. And that what you think about, what you visualize, what you say to yourself, or what you feel about yourself has an impact on your life. Take command of it. Nobody ever talked to me like this. And he took us through a guided imagery meditation. And that night I saw a vision of something I had no idea I was going to experience. I saw a vision of me standing in front of a large audience, about 1 million people speaking. I think it was probably a dissociative identity disorder.
And you were 17 years old at this point.
I was 17 at that time, almost 18. And that was the night I had a sense that maybe, just maybe, I could overcome my learning problems and someday learn how to read, because I had not read yet. And I basically said, I really, really, really didn't want to be dumb. I wanted to be intelligent. And that was the turning point. That was I went to a health food store, and I found a book by Chico's Organic Gardening and Natural Living with a hippie on the front, looked like me because I had long hair and a beard at the time. And I thought, if that guy could write the book, I bet I could read it. And I looked at a organic gardening book, which was the first book I ever tried to go from cover to cover. And I made a commitment. It was a slow, steady thing with the help of my mom when I eventually moved back to Texas to learn 30 words a day to eventually have enough of a vocabulary to. So I started reading dictionaries and memorizing words to be able to read someday. And then once I learned, I never stopped. And I never stopped reading. And I eventually started gathering students that wanted to learn from me, which was like inspiring. And then I by the time I was at the University of Houston, a few years, about 3 years in, I used to have 100 to 150 students gathered under the tree every day, and I would do philosophy sessions. And by the time I was, you know, 22, 23, whatever, I had classes going every single day, every day. And I never stopped. I just kept going from a local area to a city, to the state, to the nation, the world. I've been now 154 countries speaking, and I just love research.
You found your purpose.
I found my purpose at 17. And I've been 48 years, I'm 66 now, 48 years pursuing that. And I love that. I mean, I'm sure just like you love what you're doing, I love what I'm doing. And I just can't think of anything else I'd rather be doing than sharing information that I find and learn as I go. So
yeah, and now you've been sharing it with millions and millions of people at this point. Yeah. You've impacted so many.
I'm a firm believer that it's not what happens to you, it's what you decide to do with it. And that anything you're not grateful for is baggage. Anything that is that you're grateful for becomes fuel. And you want to see things on the way, not in the way. And the quality of your life is based on the quality of the questions you ask. If you ask questions like, for instance, what is the highest priority action I can be doing at this moment to serve the greatest number of people in the most efficient, effective way, in a way that inspires me and fulfills their needs? if I ask that question, my life moves in a different direction. Then I ask, how's whatever's happening to me today, no matter what's happening, how's it helping me fulfill my mission? These are resourceful questions.
Okay, so this is perfect because it kind of leads me into the DeMartini method, which is a series of questions. And are the questions that you just asked, are they part of those? Tell me about that.
No, the DeMartini method is something that started. Can I share a little story, but it leads
deeper? Please. Yeah, I'd love it.
Okay, so when I first started to learn how to read and started living in a dictionary and memorizing a dictionary and increasing my vocabulary, my mom would test me on 30 words a day to grow it. By the time I was almost 19, right before my 19th birthday and Christmas, because I was born on Thanksgiving Day, a month earlier than Christmas, my mom asked me, what is it that I would want for my birthday? And I said to my mom, I want the greatest teachings, the greatest writings on the face of the earth by the greatest minds who ever lived, the greatest teachings that a human being could get. I wanted to learn the greatest laws and principles and build a foundation of knowledge so when I share with something with somebody, it's truly meaningful and it's solid. And she looked at me and she said, you sure you don't want a t-shirt, son? I said, no, I want the greatest teachings on earth, Mom. And she goes, Well, she had a brother who was a professor at MIT, which I called Uncle Ralph. And he was a physicist and chemist. And he, as a gift, sent on a flatbed truck, 2 6-by-6-by-6-foot wooden crates filled with thousands of books.
No way. That's amazing. He sent you an entire library?
A library. Now, many of the books were older, but they were, I guess, some of his library. I don't know. But I remember when they unloaded it on the front of the yard, I got a crowbar out, opened up the box of these big crates, and carried them in. I spent hours carrying these books in. And I filled my room with it, except for a little yoga mat that I would do a sun salute in the sunrise. And I started to devour the books. And two of the books that stood out to me at that time, one was called The Discourse on Metaphysics by Leibniz, the Gottfried Wilhelm Leibniz. And he said that there was a magnificent order in the universe that few people ever get to see, but those that do, their lives are changed forever. And when I read that, I got tears in my eyes. I couldn't understand why, but I always said, when I get tears in my eyes, there's something there that I need to pursue, you know?
Sure.
So I wrote that down. Then I came across The Principles of Quantum Mechanics by, Paul Dirac. This is a Nobel Prize winning piece. And I had to have a dictionary and I had to have encyclopedias with me to even start to read this book. And I made a commitment to study this. And he basically said that for every particle, there's an antiparticle. He was the one that created the idea of antiparticles in physics. For every particle, there's an antiparticle. And if you merge them together, you make light. And if you take light, you can make particle nanoparticles. Einstein said that. And I thought, wow, I was naive and I was young and I was ignorant at the time. And I thought, I wonder what happened if I took positive and negative emotions and merged them together. Could I make enlightenment? Just as a metaphor. And then I said, and that would allow me to get access to a hidden order, as David Bohm describes, in the so-called apparent chaos that we have in our life, our emotional life, our amygdala, compared to our executive objectivity. And I thought, well, wow, it would be interesting if I could create a system of helping people take their emotional disturbances, their impulses towards and their instincts away from things which run their life. Because if you're infatuated with something, it occupies space and time in your mind and runs you. When you resent something, it occupies space and time in your mind and runs you. When you're poised and present, you run you. And that's where you have sort of an enlightenment. You're letting the voice and the vision on the inside be louder than the opinions on the outside, is the secret I mentioned. So I started pursuing psychology and physiology and neurology and physics and every discipline I could get my hands on. I made a commitment to read at least 100 books in every discipline and to try to figure out how to create a system to allow people to transcend their emotional vicissitudes and volatilities of their amygdala. You know, the Buddha says the desire for that which is unobtainable and the desire to avoid that which is unavoidable is a source of human suffering. And I thought, wow, our amygdala wants a hedonistic pursuit of a pleasure without a pain, but our objective life, our executive center, embraces pain and pleasure in the pursuit of meaning. And I thought, I need to transcend the hedonistic immediate gratification for a long-term meaningful pursuit. And so I just started to integrate that. And the DeMartini method is a series of questions to assist people in transforming their emotional volatilities into a poised state where they see the order and they're grateful for what's happened in their life and they move on.
Well, I love this so much because, as you know, everybody who is in my community who follows me, they are dealing with people who are toxic, people who actually enjoy making other people suffer. So they've been at their mercy for a long time. They feel traumatized. They feel used and abused. They feel powerless, paralyzed. And a lot of it is that they're being triggered emotionally. I mean, a lot of it is that they are feeling, angry or sad and, or defensive. They feel like they need to defend themselves or they feel, just all of that. And so what you're saying is, there is a way to get control of those emotions so that you can actually think clearly and negotiate from a place of, a clear brain.
Well, negotiation doesn't come from autocracy, as you know.
Right.
I've been involved in negotiation with Palestinian and Israeli leaders, and you don't get there by each one being right. You get there by having some common grounds to communicate. And that requires objectivity and reflection. You know, I learned something that each area of life, our spiritual quest, our mind development quest, our business quest, our financial quest, our family, our social, our physical, all areas of our life. In these seven areas that I break down life into, any area in life we don't empower, other people overpowers. And we're not a victim of their overempowerment. We're simply not empowered. Because when we get empowered, they don't really overrule us. And so what I do is I try to tell people and share with people ways to become resourceful and empowered where, and sometimes the people that are overpowering us are actually making us determined enough to step up and begin to empower that area of life. And so the very person that you could be upset about is the very person that could have been the catalyst for you to go and empower those areas in some cases. And sure, you've seen that. And then I also noticed that whenever an individual, because they have a set of priorities and set of values that are unique to them, whenever you support their values, they become nice. Whenever you challenge values, they can be mean. They can be a pussycat or the tiger. They can become altruistic and sacrifice for you if you support their values and they think they're giving something that's amazing. And they can also become narcissistic if you challenge their values. So the more you challenge the values, the more narcissistic they're going to escalate. So learning how to level the playing field and having a sustainable communication in negotiation, as you know, is essential, because if you try to overpower somebody who's being challenged already, they just escalate. It becomes like it's this kind of thing. They just escalate further and you don't get anywhere.
So in my methodology, which is the SLAY method, which is strategy, leverage, anticipate what they're doing and focusing on you and your case, I actually teach people, I say, I'm teaching you how to ethically manipulate the manipulator because you have to talk their language.
Well, manipulation, I'd like to say something about that. Manipulation, negotiation, caring are all the same thing in different degrees of effectiveness. Can I share some funny stories about it? My wife, who passed away many years ago, she would want to go to dinner at Le Cirque in New York a lot, okay? And sometimes we'd go to the Le Cirque, and it'd be $1,000 to go to dinner. And I'd sometimes, at that stage of my life, didn't want to pay $1,000 just for that, and drink wine and stuff like that. It wasn't my thing. So I told her, I said, that's not, it's challenging to my value system. I'm trying to invest money and everything else, and paying $1,000 a night to go to dinner is kind of, that's ridiculous for me, for what I'm trying to do. And we had a discussion about it, and she was so brilliant. And she said, I understand, honey, and thank you for giving me the feedback. I didn't slam her for it. I just said, this is how I'm feeling about it. So the next few days goes by and she doesn't ask to go there. And then all of a sudden she comes up to me and she says, I was talking to Nurit. And, you know, Nurit is married to Vernon, who is the head of Pfizer Pharmaceutical Company. And she was telling me that he's been a little bit distressed. And I told her, I said, I think that John could help him. And but their favorite place to go is Le Cirque. And so we thought we might, if would you be willing to go there? Because I know if you chatted with him, I'm sure you could close a deal with him and that could be worth thousands. And I said, okay, now I'll go there. But here's the deal. Can you tell Sirio at Le Cirque, who's the guy that owns him, who's a friend of ours, said, can you tell him that I really like some steamed fish and some vegetables? I don't want all that rich, you know, gourmet food. It just sits on my stomach and I don't really want any wine. You can have wine if you want, but I'm not interested in that. And she says, I already called him about it. I already knew that. Okay, so I was at Le Cirque 2 days later, and I negotiated a deal, and I got what I want. I got more advantage than disadvantage, and I was a pussycat. Well, before that, I was a tiger.
Coming up, more on Negotiate Your Best Life with Rebecca Zahn.
Piggy banks become biggie banks. Little action steps make big dreams. By the inch, it's a cinch. By the yard, it's hard. By the mile, it's a pile.
Is there something that's interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. You can connect with a professional counselor in a safe, private environment online, or it can even be through phone, chat, or text. They help you with any issue that you have, including depression, stress, anxiety, toxic relationships, sleeping, or trauma, basically anything you can think of. And if you don't click with your therapist, you can get a new counselor at any time. They're available worldwide, and financial aid is available for those who qualify. Best of all, it's truly affordable for my listeners. If you're interested in this online counseling service, why not get started today? Just head to betterhelp.com/Rebecca Zung to fill out the questionnaire and get started. That's betterhelp.com/Rebecca Zung. Are you struggling with how to negotiate and win? Maybe you're dealing with a personality that's particularly challenging, like a narcissist or other high-conflict personality, and you're feeling powerless. Make sure to download my free Win My Negotiation cheat sheet at www.winmynegotiation.com.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can listen to more episodes that show you the path to how to negotiate your best life.
And I just navigated my way through all these nasty people, but never really stopped to think about what was going on and what was motivating them and why they were bothering me so much. And then when I started reading all these Chicken Soup for the Soul stories, I know this, I must sound like I was really late to this, but I was 50 when I realized what a narcissistic person was and what a toxic person was. And then I said, oh my gosh, I'm allowed to get rid of these people.
And now we return to today's show.
So I would say that narcissism sometimes comes about when our values are challenged. And if we find a way of making them get something that calms that down, they can be realistic all of a sudden. So my wife was a master negotiator. Then I used to come to her, and if I walked up to my wife and I said, well, I'm on my way, I'll go on a tour, I'll be gone for a month, I'll see you in a month, babe, high five, I love you, babe, you know, she'd castrate me. She wouldn't, you know, that would not be very respectful. But if I go up to her and I hold her in my arms and I look into her eyes and I say, it's time for me to go on tour again, I love you, thank you for being in my life. I just wanted to know if you'd be willing to do something. What's that, honey? Would you meet me in Venice in 30 days? I'm going to make probably between $300,000 or $400,000, maybe $500,000 in the next month. Is there any way you could meet me in Venice? I'd like to have a rendezvous and have a romantic, just get together for 3 or 4 days in Venice for the tour I'm doing. And she says, I love you, honey. Thank you for working so hard. I'll make all the arrangements. And so if I care enough about her to find out what her highest values and needs are, and I can articulate them, my needs in terms of those needs, she feels cared for. if I do it in a way where I'm getting my needs met, but her needs aren't getting met, she's going to feel I'm manipulating. And if I do it in a way where I'm autocratic and don't even care about her needs, she's going to call me a narcissist. But the reality is, it's just how effective am I in able to making sure they're getting an equal win out of what I'm getting a win out of.
And yeah.
If I can do that, then we both win out of our games. But it's all in a sense using your intelligence. It's only called manipulation when you're not doing it in a way where they're winning out of it.
Hey, well, that's why I call it ethically manipulating the manipulator,
exactly.
And that's why I call my book Negotiate Like You Matter, because all human beings want to feel seen, heard, and know that we matter. I mean, and so nobody's going to settle in a negotiation if they feel like they're not getting anything out of the
deal. That's it. If you help other people get what they want to get in life, you get what you want to get in life. I negotiated a deal on a divorce up in Vermont many years ago, where the girl had been seeing a guy for 8 years secretly and wanted out of the relationship, but didn't want to leave because of all the turmoil with the kids, the Jewish family. And the other guy was still married and was trying to get through a divorce and was this whole thing with them. And it finally blew up and she ended up, saying, I'm leaving now. And the guy's like going, what? Out of the blue. And I showed him all of the wins and how it's going to win, because she's been gone for 8 years. She hasn't been with you for 8 years, man. Wake up. And now the benefits of this. And I sat him down, and when they got through, he got so many benefits of what was happening by her moving on that they had the most endearing, integral conversation with tears in their eyes as they were negotiating their settlement. It was the most amazing thing. And it wasn't a bitter situation. And within about 13 months, he met somebody else. She'd already got the guy. She already was pleased with her marriage. He goes on. And then he realized he partly got married because of his parents and what they expected. And so the whole thing was a hidden order in it that I like to think about. And once she got what they both wanted, they actually had a very deep and intimate relationship. And that was what they needed for the sake of the kids.
Yeah. That's beautiful. I want to have a conversation with you about mindset, because I always say 80% of a negotiation is won before you even walk into a room. I just had this conversation with Bob Proctor last week, and he actually challenged me. He said it's 95% mindset. And I'm like, I actually can't disagree with you. So whether it's 80 or 95%, I think your mindset is so, so important. So can you talk about mindset? And specifically what I want you to talk about, because I've heard you talk about this before, is that there's a huge difference between mindset and just positive thinking. I want you to speak to that.
I'm not a big promoter of positive thinking. I think that's half the equation. You need positive thinking when you're on the downside, but you need realistic negative thinking when you're in a fantasy. When somebody's got a fantasy about who somebody's going to be, they need to look at the downsides or they're blind. You know, I always say infatuation is consciousness of the upside, but unconscious of the downsides. And resentment is conscious of the downsides, unconscious of the upsides. To be fully conscious, you need to see both sides. You know, I'm not a nice person or a mean person. I'm a human being that I have moments when I'm nice and moments when I'm mean. I'm just a human being. But yeah, I think that it's all really mind stuff. I mean, how can you take the mind out of it? You can't take the mind out of the game. It's all based on our past associations we experience, our wounds, our fantasy expectations. Anytime you expect others to live in your values, or you expect to live in other people's values, you're going to run into a snag. Anytime you expect to be able to communicate effectively, one of the greatest questions I ever found in relationships is asking, how is what they're dedicated to helping me fulfill what I'm dedicated to? And how am what I'm dedicated to helping them fulfill theirs? If you can't answer that, you got nothing to communicate with. That's an important question.
So I love also, you know, a lot of people are like, where do I begin? I'm so paralyzed. I feel so far behind. I'm so deep in the ditch that I'm just never going to climb out. I'm never going to be able to turn this around. I'm never going to be able to win. I'm never going to be able to get what I want. So talk about that. You have a great quote about breaking things down that I want you to mention, and then also talk about how people can start doing that.
Well, you know, piggy banks become biggie banks. Little action steps make big dreams. By the inch, it's a cinch. By the yard, it's hard. By the mile, it's a pile. You know, you got to take it in little steps. When I first started to read, I had to learn how to read a dictionary to read just to study words before I could read. I had to do it in steps. And then I'd started reading, and then I'd never put books down. So, you know, it's a step-by-step thing. Building momentum comes from a persistence on incremental expansion. It's the little domino into the bigger domino into the bigger domino and the bigger domino that really gets the momentum going. But, you know, I'm a firm believer, you know, in my observation, and this may not be what everybody's seen, but my observation, whenever I'm upset with somebody, it's because it's reminding me of something that's a wound in my past. So if I'm resenting somebody, what I'm pointing my finger at is actually looking inside me, and I'm going, hmm. So I went through an Oxford dictionary. I'm a neurotic guy, as you're probably thinking. I went to the Oxford dictionary, and I went and circled every possible human behavioral trait I could find in this big dictionary. This is a big Oxford dictionary. I found 4,628 individual traits in the dictionary. And what I circled them or underlined them, and then I thought of who is it that I know that I perceive with my illusion, my projection, who's the most extreme example of that behavior. And I put their initial out there. And then I went and asked myself, okay, John, go to a moment where and when you, Dr. DeMartini, have displayed and demonstrated that same trait, action or inaction, that behavior in your own life. And I started writing down the places, and I didn't stop until I could see it to the degree that I saw in the person that I judged. I went through all 4,628 traits. I found out I was kind and cruel and nice and mean and altruistic and narcissistic and honest. I found them all. I found everything.
I am just amazed. I'm absolutely in awe of that.
I found I had every single thing, and I realized whatever anybody said about me, it was true. It wasn't always in the context they were projecting, but I found it true. And then when I did that, I realized, so when I'm reacting to somebody, it's because I'm too proud or too humble to admit that I own that. Because when I own that, who am I to judge them? That was a real big insight.
I mean, just to have the ability to be so self-aware. I mean, because not very many people are going to want to take a look and turn that spotlight back on themselves and take blame for that and take responsibility for your not so nice traits.
Well, right? You know, they found out. You know, you've heard of the term body dysmorphia that some models have.
Yeah.
And what they do is whenever they exaggerate somebody else, they'll minimize. One of the most beautiful women in the world, voted one of the most beautiful women in the world, had dysmorphia. And what she was doing is she was taking the hair of one supermodel and comparing her hair to them, taking the thighs of another one, taking the breast of another one, taking the face of another one, everything else, and taking the best of everybody, but not the total of everybody, just the best parts of them, comparing herself to them and devaluing herself and couldn't see her own beauty. Amazingly, the world did, but she couldn't. And she would cry over that. And I helped her see that as long as we subordinate to other people and are too humble to admit what we see in others inside us, we're always going to play small and disempower ourselves until we finally realize that what we see in them is us. Because as long as we're too proud or too humble to admit what we see in others inside us, we can't be authentic. Because if we're too proud, pride is not who we are. Shame is not who we are. Who we are is a loving individual wanting to be fulfilled and to do something that makes a difference in the world with equity and fair exchange.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, we are a spiritual being having a human experience.
Exactly. Exactly. It's a very ancient proverb that I think Wayne Dyer even catapulted through into America.
I remember. Yeah, totally. So for people who are in these situations, these feeling, you know, they're in the breakdown period, and they want to break through, but they don't know where to start. Where would you tell them to start?
Well, I'll just say it this way. Asking 100,000 women, maybe, and men.
I have men who watch me too. My audience is actually 60% women, 40% men.
Yeah, well, my experience is when I ask people, what are you looking for in a relationship? We typically start with visual because we can see farther than we can hear. Then we go to audio because we can hear farther than we can smell. Then we go to smell. Then we go to taste. Then we go to touch because our senses are based on distance like that. And what we do is we typically start a relationship with looks. We can go into a crowd and we can scan out very effectively visually with looks. After we go to looks, then we want to go to intelligence. Women want a man and men want a woman with intelligence. Then we want somebody that's resourceful and that has ambition, that wants to do something and not just sit around and do nothing. Then we want somebody that's got some resources financially. Then we want somebody that wants to be with us. And then we want somebody that's got social savvy and we want somebody that's inspired. So anything we can do to empower the seven areas of our life makes us more empowered and makes us more valuable in the marketplace of life, not just relationship, but life. So the wisest thing to do is to ask, what is the highest priority actions I can be doing today to help empower the various areas of my life that are disempowered? And go and work on yourself, because you can spend your whole life trying to stop other people, but the wisest thing to do is empower yourself so you now have the power and don't have anybody overruling you.
Yeah. So let's give them like homework. What's something they can start today?
Okay. Make a list of every single thing that they have had happen to them in their past that they feel is a mistake or an error, or you're angry or you're resentful or whatever, and ask, how is this experience helping you get what you want? Stop and ask. How can you use it resourcefully? Because as William James says, the greatest discovery of his generation is that human beings can alter their lives by altering their perceptions and attitudes of mind. So if we sit there and say, the world did this to me, and we blame, as a picture that said, we blame others, we're not going to get anywhere. We're not going to ever empower ourselves. So the wise thing is to do is ask, how can I use this resourcefully to fulfill what's most meaningful to me so I can learn to see that no matter what happens, I can turn it into being on the way, not in the way. And then ask, what is the highest priority action I can do today that is most important, most meaningful, that fulfills me most, that I can do, that I have control over? You only have control over perceptions, decisions, and actions in life, nothing else. Take command of perceptions by finding out how it's helping you fulfill what's meaningful, and your actions by doing what's highest in priority, which raises self-worth, and then get clear about what it is that's really deeply meaningful to you, the mission and purpose that you want to dedicate your life to, whether raising family or doing a social cause or, like you, educating people on reality. Whatever it is, find out what it is so you have something meaningful that you can't wait to get up in the morning and do. When you do, you're a lot more resilient, you're more objective, you have bigger vision, you're likely to end up being more fair exchange, you're more likely to get remunerated, build wealth, you're more likely to have empowerment, you're less likely to have anybody affect you anymore.
Yeah, so beautiful. I love that. I love that. So I want to ask you, you know, we'll get to your ways people can use your resources and things. But I also want to ask you this question. You were born on Thanksgiving, which I think is actually kind of a meaningful thing, because I want to ask you, what part do you think that gratitude plays in people's healing?
I wrote a book called Count Your Blessings, The Healing Power of Gratitude and Love. So that's a book out there. And I did that before my mother passed away. Because when I was 4 years old, my mother put me to bed and she said, son, make sure you count your blessings. As you go off into sleep, think about what you're grateful for, because those that are grateful for what they have, they get more to be grateful for. I have 26 volumes. I can't show you this because of my Zoom, but 26 800-page volumes of gratitudes, 10-point, one-inch margins. I do it every single day. I type yours in, the opportunity to be in your show today. I type that in because gratitude is the key that opens up the gateway of the heart. And inside the heart is love. And love radiates out and window washes the mind and brings inspiration to the mind, enthusiasm to the body, certainty and presence, which are the transcendental feelings that allow you to magnetize opportunity and people, places, things, ideas, and events into your life that are inspiring to you. Gratitude is the key.
Gratitude is the key. I think so too. And I think it's so meaningful that you were born on Thanksgiving.
I do believe that. My mom said, this is irony. My mom said that I had to eat a turkey sandwich. I didn't get to have a turkey feast. And I have been eating turkey sandwiches my whole life.
I love it. Okay, so tell us where people can get your resources. I know you have some free things, so tell us about that.
Well, I don't know what to, did they give a little CD or something out? I don't know what my team put on there.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, no. Okay. Then all I can say is that every human being has a set of values, a set of priorities. And whenever they're living by their highest priorities and highest values, they become resourceful and empowered. On my website is a complimentary little questionnaire that I've used for millions of people. And it helps them discern what's really, really, really important and what their life demonstrates is important. If you ask somebody what their values are, they'll tell you social idealisms, honesty, peace, truth, and all this social stuff. These conformist idealisms. I'm not interested in that. What I'm interested in is what does your life demonstrate? Because your life demonstrates your values, and identifying what's truly most important to you that you're inspired to do and starting to structure your life in a way that you're doing that on a daily basis. And that may require delegation of other things and serving other people to be remunerated to be able to pay for the delegation. But doing something you love every day and prioritizing your day, it makes you resourceful, makes you empowered, makes you expand, wakes up your leader, wakes up your genius, allows you to have more resourcefulness, and allows you to transcend the judgments and the vicissitudes of external influences that we end up being victims of history of instead of masters of destiny of.
Yeah, I love that. So what is the website?
It's just drdmartini.com, drdmartini.com.
Okay, and it's DR.
DR.
And then D-E, just so that people are spelling it right. It's D-R and then D-E-M-A-R-T-I-N-I.com.
It's all one word, DeMartini. And just look on the website for Determine Your Values. It's 30 minutes of your time. It's worth the time spent. Do it again a week later, a month later, and a quarter later. And be honest about the answers. Beware of writing down fantasies about how you think it should be or how you wish you would like. I'm not interested in fantasies because fantasies lead to the nightmares. I'm interested in looking objectively about what your life is demonstrating that you're committed to doing so you can start to structure yourself in a wise manner to get productive outcomes to empower your life.
Thank you so much. I love it. That's a beautiful way to end. This has been absolutely incredible. And so for any of you who are on the verge of breakdown and you're ready to break through, this is the stuff to do. Do exactly what he says to do, and it will change your life. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be on the show. Thank you.
Thanks for stopping by and listening to this episode of Negotiate Your Best Life. I'm Rebecca Zung. Check back next Monday for more inspirational pearls of wisdom. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, I'd love if you would give it a 5-star rating and tell me what you liked in a review on iTunes. Also, be sure to grab your winning negotiation cheat sheet at winmynegotiation.com. And remember, today is a perfect day to start negotiating your best life.